Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. This is another one of those socially distant segments with a returning guest that last time we were together, we were at State Fair. Don Moeller wants the shirt. He can't have it just yet. They've opened El Guapo across the street. No chicken and waffles this time. And I must say that our friends at Taharka here in Baltimore are going to be shipping ice cream throughout the holidays, 8 at a time. We're giving you a special $15.70 discount out of Taharka by using Baltimore Positive. We'll be telling you more about that with our Taharka ice cream makers here in Baltimore, Maryland. Also, our friends at Fadley's are shipping those crab cakes all over the country. One click, and you make people happy. Nothing says I love you for the holidays quite like sending someone a couple of crab cakes from Fadley's. Don Moeller's son, Jeff Moeller, still getting deals done, closing deals at Moeller and Gary Realty. I drove by in Catonsville in the 21228 the other day on Frederick Road. You can drive by on the internet right now and find Jeff Moeller at Moeller and Gary Realty. Don, you've outdone yourself here between governors and Speaker of the House and congressmen and former congresswomen and then senators this week here in the aftermath of an election. Don, I'll let you do the honors here.
Well, as I said earlier today when we were speaking with Senator Van Hollen, I said Maryland is incredibly fortunate, and I don't think there's any hyperbole in that we have two of the finest senators in the entire nation. I mean, it's hard to get better representation in Washington than we get from Senator Van
Hollen. Georgia should be so lucky, I should say.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, all across the nation, they would like to have folks like this, and it is our pleasure to welcome back one of those two outstanding senators, Senator Ben Cardin. Senator, welcome back to Baltimore Positive.
Well, Don, it's great to be with you. As a resident of Baltimore, a lifelong resident of this area, thank you for your public service to the people of Baltimore. You just did incredible service and steady leadership during a very difficult time. So we thank you, and it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, thank you. Senator, I'm going to start with you. Earlier this morning, Nestor said something, and I said, I'm going to ask both senators right off the bat your question. As we got ready to do the shows this morning, Nestor said, it's been over a week. Why don't I feel better? Why don't I feel better? And I said, Nestor, I can't.
I'm not happy enough. I thought I'd be happier than this. I really did.
I can't think of a better question to put to our guests. So, Senator Cardin, why doesn't Nestor feel better?
Well, yeah, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to go into all the problems that he might be having. But I'll tell you this. We had a very enthusiastic election on November the 3rd. We had record numbers turning out. People had very strong views as to who they wanted to see as the next president of the United States. The people have spoken. Joe Biden will be the next president of the United States. He won by a convincing margin in both the popular vote and the electoral vote, electoral college. So he's going to be the next president. And if you want to see a calming influence, if that's what is concerning you, follow his news conferences and the way that he is conducting himself. He really is very sincere when he says he wants to bring our country together. He wants to represent all Americans, including those who voted for Donald Trump. He recognizes we're in the midst of this pandemic and it's getting worse, and we have to make COVID-19 and ending this virus our top priority. He wants to build back better America to provide opportunities for people who have just been left behind. So I'm feeling much, much more comfortable about our future today than I did just a few weeks ago. So get with it. Be a little happier.
Don't worry, be
get
happy.
With it. I love it. Senator comes on to me. I want to ask you this because you're one of the young old timers around here, haven't done this a long time, like Joe Biden. And tell me about Joe Biden. I've never met Joe Biden. I see him on TV. Seems like a good man. I mean, obviously from all that, but you know him. And then we'll ask you what you know about Mitch McConnell a little later. But for Joe Biden, tell us something we need to know about Joe Biden, something personal to you and Joe Biden, because you've spent time with him.
Well, Joe Biden is just a person who is very comfortable among working people, among just about any community. He can go into a senior center. He can go into a high school. He can be in an urban community. He can be out with farmers. And he'll be comfortable with in that group. And you'll notice that. He'll have that calming influence. He really understands the challenges that we face in this country. He has faced them and his family over and over again from the time of his early childhood through the tragic losses that he experienced in his lifetime. So he knows what Americans are going through. I had the opportunity to be with Joe Biden in the United States Senate. He was the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee when I was a freshman member of the Senate and appointed to serve on Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He helped me a great deal as a new member of that committee on foreign policy issues. I got to see him firsthand in the relationship and knowledge he has of the world players. You know, from day one, he has credibility with the leaders of the world, both our friends and our foes. But they'll know very clearly that Joe Biden's going to stick to the principles of America, to honesty, to support of democratic institutions, to support of human rights, to free and fair elections. And you're going to have a steady hand in regards to leading U.S. foreign policy and security issues. But then I got to also to work with Joe Biden when he was vice president. I was in his office on numerous occasions and had incredible discussions with him. I was with him at times on personal issues in his life. And I will always remember the follow-up calls and conversations we had, because he really appreciates that type of empathy and friendship. So you're going to have a very genuine person in Joe Biden, and he understands how to get things done. He knows how the legislature works. He'll have friends on the Republican side of the aisle, and he'll bring, I think, us together in getting policy done to meet the needs of the people of this country. I couldn't be more excited about Joe Biden. He is just he's a guy that if you want to invite someone over for dinner, he's the type of person you would like to have that conversation with. I'll warn you, though, if you invite him over for dinner, it might be a lengthy evening. He likes to really engage in conversation.
Was it one of his granddaughters that said on 60 Minutes, she said, "I'm going to warn you, if you give him your cell phone number, you will get a call." So evidently this liking to connect is a real thing. You know, it's interesting, Senator. Everyone reacts differently, but because of the COVID and what have you, we had to limit our celebration a week or so ago when the vice president-elect and vice president-elect came out in Wilmington to acknowledge their victory. And then they brought their families up and their grandchildren up. And it was just my brother and sister-in-law and my wife and I. And at one point, all four of us, I think, cried at different times that night. I think that was a national phenomenon. And a moment when my sister-in-law cried was when there was a picture of Joe holding one of the, I guess, grandchildren, and Kamala holding one of her nieces or nephews. And my sister-in-law just said, and I think it's affirmed by what you just said, she just, as she's crying, she goes, "My God, we have a real, genuine family back in the White House again." Is beyond the fact that we like that. And boy, you're a family guy. Anybody knows you, you're a family guy. You're a Baltimore guy. Is having a real, genuine family in the White House, is that important for a nationwide psyche?
Oh, absolutely. You know, America, one of the great institutions of our country, is founded on the strength of family. That's, you know, part of what makes this nation the great nation it is. It's our values. And our values come from the fact that family is an important part of our life. And yes, with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, it is real. But you know, I thought it was a real class act on the night he was declared to be the president-elect. The first person we saw was Kamala Harris, and Joe Biden gave her prime time because of the significance of her election. It wasn't just about Joe Biden. It wasn't just about the fact that Donald Trump will not be president after January the 20th. It was the fact that for the first time in the history of our nation, we finally elected a woman to one of the two highest positions in our country, and a woman of color. I think that was a moment that Joe Biden recognized would be something that could motivate young people, could motivate so many people in this nation. So he allowed that moment to take place. And it speaks to who Joe Biden is. He recognizes that we are a nation that are stronger because we understand diversity and we understand opportunity for all.
Well, Senator, speaking of the job ahead, and you said something that I think has so many of us nervous, frustrated, pick whatever term you want to use. I actually heard some optimism in your voice regarding the ability for the Senate to work again because of Joe Biden's persona, because of Joe Biden's familiarity with the institution. I guess what worries guys like me, Nestor, people on the street, is how does that work in a Senate controlled by Mitch McConnell? Nestor alluded to the fact we're going to ask you about the vice president and the president-elect, but we also have to ask, can any governing take place in a Mitch McConnell Senate?
So, Don, let me correct you. We have not yet determined the control of the United States Senate. There are two runoff elections in Georgia, which will be held on January the 5th. So it's going to take some time yet before we get that decision being made. Georgia is a state that President-elect Biden won, and the votes between the Senate candidates was very, very close in the one race against the incumbent. And in the special election, where multiple candidates, our candidate, Raphael Warnock, came actually in first place. So we are hopeful that those two seats will go to Democrats. If they do, the makeup of the Senate would be 50-50. And with Vice President Harris, the becomes the 101st senator and breaks the tie in favor of Democrats. So we're not yet conceding who will control the Senate. But having said that, the Senate works with a broader consensus. You have to have bipartisan working majorities in the United States Senate. And I really do believe Joe Biden, who spent the majority of his public life in the United States Senate, he understands the Senate. He also has really good friends on both sides of the aisle. And he'll do something that President Trump never did. He's going to invite Democrats and Republicans to the table as legislation is being drafted, as we are discussing how to deal with our national problems, so that all of us participate in the process and therefore have an investment to get to the finish line. President Trump never did that.
Senator, you mentioned values early on about American values, and that's what we are, and we're families, and we're hardworking, and we're honest, and we're all of that. And then we've watched the last 4 years, and we watched this election, and I know all of us were looking for this sort of blue wave, and I know Don had written so much about decency, and I've talked about it and been angst-ridden out in social media about what I hear on a daily basis. And in terms of bullying, racism, I mean, the whole Trump chart, that would be more unpopular than it was last week, given a vote to the American people that 73 million people voted for him, which is crazy. But that happened. Where are we with values? And how do you add that up in your mind, being that we're values in an integrity country?
Well, there's no question that America's strength has been in our values. We are looked upon by freedom-loving people around the world as their eyes and voices and efforts to bring about democratic states. So we are clearly the leader on promoting democracy, good governance, anti-corruption, human rights, the rule of law, free and fair elections, et cetera, and honesty. But in this 4 years, we've seen the President of the United States trample on those values. There is no question about it. So you asked a very good question. Why did so many Americans support Donald Trump for re-election? Now, I'm sure they'll be analyzing this for the next decade, or maybe longer. There'll be books written about this. But I'll just give you my just knee-jerk reaction. And I think I could sum it up in one word. There was fear. There was fear of losing jobs. There was fear of people who are different. There was fear of law and order. There was fear of quote, socialism. There was all types of fear that was stoked by the strategy of the Trump election campaign. And it was consistent with the way Donald Trump ran his office. Look about all the fear he instilled in Americans on immigrants. And yet when you look at the numbers, look at the facts, you find that the immigrant community is actually more law-abiding than the general community at large. I've been down to the border with Mexico, and I know the people that are coming across the border are desperate. Most are children, by the way, children. And yet Donald Trump would have you believe that these are warlords and drug dealers that are coming across our border. They're not. So it is that fear that the president, who has the largest megaphone in the world, was able to convince a large base of Americans to support his candidacy for president. But I don't think it means that our values are not what they are. I think American values are what they are. They're our strength, and we're going to be back on track.
Senator, he led with fear on everything except the thing we should fear, which is the virus. For each other, more than 100,000 people today, million people this week in this country diagnosed. It's all over my Facebook page, all around my world at this point. And obviously something that Larry Hogan's had to deal with here in the state. I live in the city, and Jackson and Johnny O out in Baltimore County, all the county executives having to deal with this. The fear of everything but the virus. I mean, science was eschewed here the last 4 years, whether it's a global warming, whether it's coal, whether it's solar, whether it's wind, any of that. But the virus itself, that will be the legacy of Donald Trump.
You're exactly right. So what Donald Trump did is say, look, it's more important to me to see our economy respond. So therefore, I don't want to close any part of our economy. I want people out there in the streets, going to bars, doing their business, going back to school, because I want to show that our economy is performing at such a high pitch, because I'm the president who brought us the greatest economy in the history of the world, which is not true. But that was his message. And in doing that, he not only jeopardized Americans' health, and we saw, and as healthcare experts say, there's hundreds of thousands of deaths. We know that. Many of those were preventable. We now have over 10 million infections. Many of those were preventable. And the second part of that is, because we didn't get the virus under control initially, our economy is going to be in worse shape than it should be in. Because unless people have confidence that they're safe to go out and participate and send their kids to school, they're not going to do that. So more businesses are going to be shuttered and closed as a result of Donald Trump. He didn't help the economy. He hurt the economy, and he hurt the public health and safety of America.
Senator, I've heard that in the past week from two small business owners, restaurant business owners, and in talking to them, saying, how are you doing? And they both said this: we're hanging on by our fingernails. But Don, I can tell you, if we have another serious shutdown for a long period of time, I may never recover. And that's where we are. And that leads me to this gridlock again. And help our listeners understand, and if you're listening, to Maryland Senator Ben Cardin, help our listeners understand how on earth something as important as the CARES Act can be stuck in Mitch McConnell's desk drawer. I don't think the average American understands that, Senator.
I have a hard time understanding it also. It was mid-March when we passed the original CARES Act. It was totally bipartisan. It truly helped keep our economy afloat, deal with the pandemic directly, the cost, helped our state and local governments, helped families that were people were unemployed, helped our schools, and the list goes on and on and on. And we did that in mid-March thinking that the pandemic would be over with by the summertime. It was not. Now, part of the CARES Act was a program to help small businesses, that restaurant you're referring to. I want you to know that was done. I'm the ranking Democrat, the lead Democrat on the Small Business Committee. I drafted those proposals with Marco Rubio, the Republican chair of the committee from Florida. Democrat and Republican working together. That's how we should do it. But we recognized shortly after we passed the bill that more was going to be needed. So Senator Rubio and I have reached, I wouldn't say a final agreement, but I can tell you we know what is needed and we know more relief is needed.
I'm a small business owner, Senator. I can assure you, you're right. I promise you.
Your revenues are down. We know that. And if we don't act, let me tell you what the statistics look like. If we don't act, 3 months from now, one out of every three small businesses are going to be closed in this country. That's a shocking number because small businesses are the growth engine of our economy. That's where job growth and innovation takes place. And I must tell you, I am so impressed by the innovation of small business owners during this pandemic. They have come up with ways to try to survive. But how can you survive if you require attendance of groups of people and you're restricted for a year getting those people into your business? That's what we're looking at. So we need to provide the next round. Why is Mitch McConnell not doing this? I don't have an answer to that. Because it's hurting our country. It's hurting our economy. It's hurting small businesses. It's hurting state and local government. It's hurting American families. It's hurting American leadership. The list goes on and on and on. This is where the federal government needs to step in. And we have a bill. It's called Heroes 2.0. And we're hoping that we'll get Mitch McConnell to bring it up during the lame duck session. Because if he doesn't, then you're talking about January the 20th before Joe Biden's president of the United States. It means it's going to be at least February before we get legislation passed. And that's too late.
Senator, I don't want to ask you to share private conversations. That's not fair. But I am going to ask you, you've known Mitch McConnell for a long time. I'm guessing you've known Mitch McConnell for 30 years, maybe more. Is the Mitch McConnell that you're trying to work with today the Mitch McConnell you first knew, or is there a Mitch 2.0? And how do you get through to him when it's just Ben Cardin and Mitch McConnell chatting?
That's a great question. And we do have chats, and we are civil, and we try to work together. Although it is very difficult, I think that Senator McConnell's sole focus has been on remaining the majority leader in the Senate and the political agenda to keep control of the United States Senate. And I was extremely disappointed when Barack Obama was elected president of the United States. He was caught having said, you know, my first objective is to make sure he's a one-term president rather than being there to support a new president when he was first elected. So
when the country was really hurting too.
That's right. But we're right in the midst of a major, major economic decline. That was the Great Recession. You're exactly right. We needed unity at that time, and we didn't get it, as we do now need unity to get out of COVID-19. So I don't have a good answer for you, but there's a second question you should have asked. Mitch McConnell could only be enabled if he has 49 or 50 other senators who stand with him. So where is the backbone of the Republican Party, and where are the Republican senators who know that they're not doing the right thing for our nation?
Go ahead, Nestor.
It's illegal to yell fire in a crowded theater. How can the President of the United States be carrying on whatever this coup attempt is? And you talk about being aided on. I mean, you mentioned Marco Rubio's name a minute ago. You mentioned Mitch McConnell. None of them have acknowledged that Joe Biden has won this election. None of them have congratulated him, Kamala, anyone. It feels like they're dragging on the question of our democracy, of our election system. All of it has been drugged through the mud. We're 10, 12 days out on it now. The disappointment I have as a citizen, I can't imagine. You know these people, as Don pointed out, as we pointed out with your counterpart earlier today. You know these people. How is this possible? How would you ever participate in such a thing?
Well, first of all, Joe Biden is the president-elect. He will take the oath of office on January the 20th. He will be our president on January 20th of next year. He won by an impressive margin. The popular vote margin was larger than we saw in the last elections. And the electoral vote is going to be extremely impressive that he won the election. There's been no demonstrated evidence of widespread corruption that would affect the outcome of this election. And that's been acknowledged by just about every legitimate source. So he's going to be the next president. Joe Biden's own comments are, look, we'll give President Trump time to determine the reality of the situation. Donald Trump has done things as president that is unprecedented, that's dangerous, that is off the rails, and he's continuing to do that. So Joe Biden, I think, is trying to put some calmness down here. He does not think that the delay in making the resources available to his transition team and his security briefings, they're very important, don't get me wrong, but he'll be prepared from day one. He is the most prepared person coming to the office of the White House, probably in the history of America. So he knows the office, he knows the agencies, he'll be prepared. But it's unfortunate that we won't have as smooth a transition. Every day, President Trump denies the Biden transition team the access they need and the security briefings they're entitled to receive. Now, it does hurt America. And that is, it just fuels those who are critical of our democratic system, who say, look, America's democracy is not really a democracy. Look, they're like a banana republic. So it does feed into the narrative that our enemies want the international community to hear. So it's not good for us, and it should stop. But I think we'll follow the lead of the president-elect and try to see whether we can't get this issue resolved in a calm way.
Well, Senator, you talked about how the president-elect is, you know, the most prepared individual to ever walk into the Oval Office. But you are an expert on national security issues. I mean, you're an expert on foreign policy. How concerned are you about events over the past week where the Secretary of Defense has been fired, senior officials at the Pentagon have been fired, and by all accounts, and I only know what I read, have been replaced by folks that really have no qualifications for those jobs beyond the fact that they are Trump loyalists. Is that a national security concern for us?
Well, I think it does raise security issues. We know that our enemies will look for vulnerabilities in America, and what President Trump is doing, they may interpret as weakness in our country and vulnerabilities to do certain maligned activities that could hurt our country. We then have the concern as to whether President Trump's going to order certain actions that could compromise America's national security or America's interests. So, yes, we are concerned about it. This president has acted irrationally in the past. He's been impulsive in the past. He's done things that have hurt our national security. So we know that. We know he didn't stand up to Mr. Putin in Russia when they put a bounty on American troops. We know that he didn't stand up to Russia when they interfered in our 2016 elections. We know that he's given the leader of North Korea two summit meetings without really changing the dynamics. In fact, it's worse today as far as North Korea's nuclear capacity. We know that he's isolated America in regards to trying to isolate China on economic issues. So there's so many areas. And then you have Afghanistan, which there we know the president's interested in removing our troops that could affect our counterterrorism efforts. There's so many things that are involved that he could compromise because of his knee-jerk reaction, not having someone such as the former Secretary of Defense who would say, Mr. President, we really can't do this for this reason. He has now yes men around him or yes women around him. And it is a situation that is uncomfortable. It's potentially dangerous.
Senator, we talk about making real change, and January 5th, Georgia is going to be in this election. Let's say it goes the right way and it's 50-50 and Kamala's breaking ties and all of those perfect world liberal democratic thoughts, right? What gets addressed above and beyond COVID? Assuming COVID is 1, 2, and 3 and all the financial small bit, all we're talking about, where would the area then go for your side and Nancy Pelosi and everyone trying to make better things happen for America?
Well, first of all, if it's 50-50 and Kamala's needed to break the tie in the Senate, I might get to see her a lot more because she might have spent a lot of time on the floor of the United States Senate. Look, I think Joe Biden needs to broaden the support. You're not going to win 51-50 votes and be able to get policies passed in the United States Senate. You've got to get a broader consensus. And that's why I said I think, you know, starting with COVID-19, bringing the Republicans and Democrats together. So we're playing from the same playbook. We're playing from the same set of facts. We have a chance to question the people who are presenting the information to us and learn from each other and take the best information. I think the majority, overwhelming majority of senators on both sides of the aisle want to do what science is telling us we need to do, what our public health officials are suggesting. But they want to do it in a way that makes political sense. And that's why I think having everyone in the room will be able to come up with a strategy. We're not going to do what Donald Trump did, which is basically put his head in the sand saying, there's nothing to be done here. I'm firing the experts. That's not going to happen. We're going to have a strong game plan to get us out of this virus. And then he'll do the same thing with a transportation bill or infrastructure bill. They'll do the same thing with prescription drugs and healthcare, which is an area that I think we can make progress. Cost of higher education with student loans, those types of issues should not be partisan divisions. We should be able to get a much broader group. And I hope he'll start with those types of programs that can unite the nation and the Congress to work in partnership with the president. So when you look back at the first 100 days of the Biden administration, you see we got things done. That's what the American people want. We get things done. They're tired of the blame game. They really want to see action.
Well, that's a perfect and perfect segue. We promised your staff we would be respectful of your time, and we will do that. But before we let you run, I have to have you weigh in on this great debate that's going to take place now in Democratic circles about messaging. And my percentages may be slightly off, and you may disagree, but I've always felt that if you looked at America, there were 20% who were pretty hard left, there were 20% that were pretty hard right, and that 60% of the American public is somewhere smack in the middle, some a little more left of center, some a little right of center, but not true ideologues. And it seems to me that on the major issues of the day, most of the public agrees with Democratic positions on health care, on gun safety, on climate change. I mean, they all poll favorable to the Democratic positions, yet down ballot, we appear to have trouble. And you know, you've heard me say it before, I think your campaign commercials, and you need to give your campaign consultants a little raise, the My Friend Ben commercials, to me, capture really the Democratic message that we're Democrats, we hear you, and I'm one of you. And what is it that keeps our party from being able to communicate that as clearly down ballot as you communicated it in those My Friend Ben commercials?
Well, thank you for that. And let me just point out what I do and what I think the Democratic Party has to do. You got to listen to people. You know, I am proud to represent Maryland. It's a great state. But I want to tell you something. You go out to Western Maryland, or you go to the Eastern Shore, or you go to some of our northern counties, they're kind of red. They're kind of Republican. And I'm there frequently having conversations, not during COVID-19. I'm doing it now through the internet. But and I would sit down, listen to their concerns.
And they didn't vote for you in a lot of cases.
No,
right?
They're not voting for me in great number. I think my margins are much better than my numbers would be stronger than you would see in a presidential election with the presidents. So I do better than most, but I don't win these areas. And in some cases I do, but rarely do I win them. But they, I think, trust me to listen to their concerns. I do deliver for them. You know, we have, along with Senator Van Hollen, and by the way, Congressman Trone, we've delivered significant help to the Appalachia region and the broadband and dealing with those issues on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. We have delivered significantly to help our farmers in the COVID relief. We got them help. So we're delivering for all of Maryland. We're listening to them. And I think that's what they want. And we're trying to get things done. And yes, I do believe Democrats and Republicans have to work together. We're going to fight to win elections. I'm going to try to get as many Democrats as I can elected. The election's over. You got to govern. You got to work together. So look, I've worked with John McCain, the late senator from Arizona, to get international human rights work done that's now the model for the global community in fighting human rights violators. I work with Rob Portman from Ohio to get major pension legislation enacted into law. I've worked with Susan Collins on healthcare issues that has been enacted into law. I could just go on down the list. I already mentioned Marco Rubio, a Republican from Florida, on the small business issues that we've gotten enacted into law. You got to work together. So yes, you're right. When you start talking about the hot button issues that can divide our nation, there's going to be a challenge. But Democrats have to talk about the bread and butter issues. Talk about affordable prescription drugs. That'll bring us together. Talk about bringing down the cost of higher education. That will bring us together. And by the way, workers want a decent salary. So talk about workers' protection in the workplace to get a fair return for the work that they're doing. And yes, we want to keep jobs here in America. We want a level playing field. Talk about those types of issues. There are issues that can bring together Democrats and Republicans. Our nation is too partisanly divided right now. I acknowledge that. But we need to work together to show that we can get things done. I said that just before. Get things done, work with Republicans, and I think that will help solve some of the division you see here in America today.
Well, Senator, before we let you run, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that the concept of a livable wage and making sure that people can have a livable wage. What's gotten lost in the aftermath of analyzing this election has gotten very little ink is the fact that in Florida, that stayed red, voted for Donald Trump, they significantly approved a $15 minimum wage. So the voters in Florida that elected Donald Trump also voted for a minimum wage. So your point is, there's a lot that brings us together if we get to talk about those issues.
You're exactly right, Don. Thanks for mentioning that. We see that over and over again, initiatives in states that would say, hey, gee, that sounds like a Democratic initiative, even though they voted for Republicans. So yes, no, we have strong support on various issues. The problem was we talk too much in partisan terms and labels rather than talking in terms of how we affect people's lives.
Well, I appreciate you letting me know there will be no coup attempt here in America by Donald Trump. You're good with that, right? We can tell everybody that that's not happening, right?
You know, I never predict what President Trump's going to do because he's done some things that are just off the charts and so dangerous. But I do have confidence in our democracy and our democratic institutions and that on January the 20th, Joe Biden will take the oath of office as president.
I have confidence with you on the wall down there at Capitol Hill. Senator, thanks so much for making time. You and Chris Van Hollen, both of you have been awesome with us over the 2 years we've been doing this. We just won a big award here and best of. And Don and I always say it's because we bring smart people on here to make our show better. So we really do appreciate you. Thanks for making time for us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you, Senator.
Stay safe, everybody. Thank you.
You too, Senator.
Washing hands, wearing our mask. He is our senator here in Maryland, Ben Cardin, on behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Mohler and all of our sponsors.
He's masking up.
And look at that. See, there you go. You'll sound different with that on there now, though, right?
Have a great one.
See you soon. On behalf of our friends at Taharka, as well as our friends at State Fair, El Guapo, our new friends at Franco's that are our old friends, and Lou Weinkamp brought me some crab and shrimp pomodoro, and Mohler and Gary Realty. And let's not forget our friends at Fadley's. They're shipping those crab cakes all over the country. All of our sponsors can be found at WNST.net, AM 1570, and BaltimorePositive.com.